Jane Williams spent her career counseling people dealing with grief. The losses they experienced were sometimes crippling and unbearable. But she discovered that many of them eventually had a transformative thought, something that popped into their heads and changed the way they felt about their loss. She started paying more attention to these stories and the way the unconscious mind can come to its own conclusions. And she wrote a book of 10 narratives called Mysterious Moments, Thoughts That Transform Grief. She's going to be reading from that book June 28th at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham. But first, she joins me now. Welcome, Jane. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Tell us what led you to write this book.
Well, it actually started a number of years ago, and it wasn't from work. I had gone by to see a friend's mother, and I knew that they had lost a child when he was about 18 months old. And curiosity got the best of me, I think, that night, and I asked her to tell me the story about him. And she told me a story that her daughter says that she had not told anyone else, and we don't think she ever told the story again, about how she had had a lingering distress over his death. Her work, her religion, her hobbies, her family, nothing seemed to quite take that distress away from her. But one night, all of a sudden, she had kind of an epiphany, an aha moment, where she had a thought that transformed that grief for her. It doesn't mean that she didn't mourn for him still, but it took away that devastating grief that she had experienced so long.
Tell us about that thought. What was that thought?
Oh, Frank, I shouldn't tell you that because then you won't read the book.
No, we will. We'll say, oh my gosh, is that what it is? I've got to read the other nine.
Okay.
Yeah.
She was watching, this was during the Vietnam War, and she was watching the news reel that night, which was particularly graphic. And she had also lost a nephew during World War II and a pretty graphic kind of an experience. And suddenly she had the thought of, my child died with his family, with their arms around him in love. He would never have to go to war. He'd never be drafted. He'd never be killed. And he would never kill anyone else. And that brought her peace.
It's interesting because in a way, I mean, when you think about the way we handle any of the big events in our life, we tell ourselves stories. We have stories about everything. We have stories about what it means to be an American. We have stories about what it means to be in our role as parent or what in our career. And so we tell stories about loss. This seems to have replaced one story with another and brought her great peace.
Yes, it did. And I think that's what's so transformative about these moments is that it alters the way you feel about that loss and the way you see it. And so it changes it. And I think it changes it in a way forever that brings peace for people.
It changes. And it seems to me that what you say, and you talk about it in the introduction, that we can get stuck. Unfortunately, if the story is not particularly helpful to us, then we keep coming around and around and we can't go forward. And that by giving us this new way of looking, this sudden another story, now we can move forward.
Yeah, when you look at the stories we tell, some of them are very short. Some of them, in terms of often when we lose an elderly parent, we look at that person and we think about their life. They may have suffered in the end. We look at it as a relief of suffering, and we can celebrate their lives. And so that's kind of the end of the story. Others develop stories that are not as positive, and sometimes people get stuck on those stories. But then there are others who their stories evolve. They are able to bring the characteristics of that person, both positive and negative, their experience with that person, and it just keeps evolving and changing over time.
In the case of this mother, the story that helped her move on was something external to her own personal experience. There's another story you talk about, the father's story, John, who has a relationship with his father. And in that case, it seems to me a much more personal moment of confrontation in some ways with his relationship with his father.
Yeah, and I think that's true because grief is so idiosyncratic, and that we all have different experiences of it, and that some of those changes come from external forces, others come from within ourselves.
Tell us what happened with John and what was the moment for him that transformed his grief.
I think John eventually faced his own responsibility in that relationship and took ownership of it. And he took ownership for his relationship with his father. And it enabled him to ask forgiveness and asking forgiveness for himself, but also forgiving his father. So it gave closure kind of to that relationship that had not been there.
And another story, you talk about a chaplain's story here, and this one I think brings us to a lot of our questions about how much of this is mystical and how much of it is sort of physical and psychological, and this story brings all of those questions at least to bear.
It does. Many people have asked me, well, what's the nature of the stories? What's the nature of the mysterious moment? And so for some people, it's more a psychological process, looking at their long history, looking at the events that happen after the death, and that all culminating to where the unconscious kind of comes to a story that's acceptable and comes into conscious thoughts. Other people see this as a very spiritual kind of experience to happen. And then in that particular story, I've had people suggest to me that there was a continuing link between the child who died and the chaplain.
Who had a very difficult time having counseled this child during their sickness. The child is lost, and the chaplain is really having a hard time getting
yes.
over it, and has what would be considered a dream that would be seen to many as a kind of a religious interpretation of what happened.
Yes.
So what do you make of this? Because if there is a common thread, it is that over time, you know, we talk about time healing all wounds, but it is action over time, isn't it? And something is going on inside of us that's not at the conscious level. Working on this problem, trying to get it solved one way or another. What do you think is happening? We call it the unconscious, but what's going on, do you think?
I'm not sure. And one of the things I think we need to remember is that you cannot will yourself for this to happen, that if you look at all the stories, none of the people at that point in time were focused on necessarily on their grief. So this process of unconscious working through, and we don't have empirical evidence to show that that's what's happening. We are studying the unconscious more than we have in the past. And so I think there's not an answer at this point.
It's interesting, too, to think about. In these cases, I think people were aware of the fact that their grief over a particular event was still a problem for them. But I wonder to what extent we have sort of displaced grief, that we're even unable to accept the power of this grief over us. And so we begin acting out over other events when it's really this thing that we haven't even acknowledged at the root of our problem.
I think that does happen. One of the things I would tell you about the stories is that I think all of the individuals had significant distress. And so the distress lingered on, and probably the positive thing about it was continue to be focused on that relationship, and so you didn't see that that negativity in other relations in their lives. But I don't think it's uncommon at all for that to get displaced on other things for people.
And some of these were sort of active on a conscious level. I think about Margaret and her code of silence. I mean, she was aware where she ultimately had to that her loss. She came to the conclusion that a code of silence about family behaviors and abuse that had gone on was partly responsible to some of the bad consequences that followed. But she had been working on this. I mean, she realized even at a conscious level that this is not a good thing, right?
Yes, but again, I would say that for most of the stories, that it just it popped up, it happened, it was that aha, that epiphany, and it was not because they were intentional or they were focused or they forced themselves to think about it.
And so I think this is one of the warnings that you would like to give too, is that sort of like that old joke, you have a guilt complex and it's all your fault. That if you're not experiencing some of what you had that you've detailed in this book, there's nothing wrong with you.
No, that's exactly right. And that's part of what the book was written for, is to give some hope and healing to people who have continuing distress. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, though, that reading stories like this help people kind of have a spark of other thoughts Therapists are often really good in terms of talking people about how they frame the grief, allowing them to tell their story. And again, I think maybe that gives a spark for this to sometimes happen.
I'd like to ask you to take a few steps back from your book, Mysterious Moments, and talk about maybe a big picture. Is there something nearly pathological about our glorification of the right to happiness? That makes it, and the vilification of any kind of pain and suffering, that makes it more difficult for us as modern people, as Western people, to accept grief and to process grief?
One of the most difficult things, I think, of this focus on happiness is that it results in a lot of isolation, a lot of personal isolation. So the notion that you should be through grief when the funeral's over or all the casseroles are gone, just doesn't work. But you keep that, like in the first story of the mother story, she kept that inside of her because she was a traditional Southern woman for all those years, never expressing it to others how she felt. And so one of the biggest things that I think happens in a culture in which we tend to deny grief and the natural life cycle of living and dying, that it keeps us isolated from each other and the help that we could get from each other.
Well, thank you so much. Jane Williams is a retired psychologist and the author of Mysterious Moments, Thoughts That Transform Grief. Jane's going to be reading from a book at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham on June 28th, and you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Just ahead, the music of NPR theme guy BJ Lederman. Stay with us.